And welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. I'm so happy to say that it really is a beautiful day today in New York, and I'm so happy to have all of you here joining in with me. I have a great show planned for you today. My guest will be Gabriela Alvarez. She is the chef and founder of Liberation Cuisine, and I'm really excited to have her on. I'll tell you more about Liberation Cuisine and Gabriela in just a little bit. But first, I want to go over some things that are in the news that you'll want to know about, some events coming up in our area, and, of course, share my weekly recipe with you. So I want to, of course, talk about the Farm Bill. The Farm Bill is, you know, up for deliberation every 5 years. This takes place, and it is a huge piece of legislation that affects farmers, consumers, and people who don't have enough to eat. And, of course, this year, with the administration that we have, they are trying to drastically reduce the support that people in need get. And they're also trying to tie it in with immigration, which has nothing to do with the Farm Bill. And they're trying to, you know, they're using it as bribery, basically. And it's just really bad. And so it did not pass the first time around, which is nothing new. It usually doesn't pass the first time around. But those of us in the food movement are really trying to work hard to not only maintain the food subsidies that are a part of it, but also the farm subsidies, the, you know, supporting organic farmers and new and young farmers who are trying to raise food in a sound ecological way, as opposed to supporting the big farmers that are not growing in a sustainable way. As a matter of fact, this year they were trying to even make CAFOs a part of the Farm Bill, like subsidizing CAFOs and calling them, part of conservation. And there's no way CAFO, for those that don't know, stands for Confined Animal Feeding Operation. And the way that we raise animals in this country is anything but with conservation in mind. It is the largest greenhouse gas emission production in the country, way more than all the cars that we drive. And so we really need to pay attention to this Farm Bill. It's really important that we all, kind of know what's going on. And a lot of farmers have come together, actually, to really stand together, not just with the Farm Bill, but with the organic labeling. As you also know, I've talked about this many times, there's been a lot of talk as to what does organic really mean. There is a big push for hydroponics to be considered organic, and as a matter of fact, this year it did get passed that hydroponic growing can be certified organic. And yet we know, those of us that do know, hydroponic is not really organic. It is better than conventional, but it is not organic. For organic farmers, organic means treating the soil, feeding the soil, not feeding the plants. And if a plant is not grown in soil, it can't really be considered organic. And so many farmers have come together to form the Real Organic Project. And the hope here with the Real Organic Project is to create a new labeling system that would be an add-on label beyond the USDA organic label. The USDA organic label now does not carry the same weight that it used to because of infiltration of big corporations who have pushed us to weaken the standards, which allow hydroponics and allow some CAFO operations to be considered organic. And they've allowed in our food, which has also been proven to be carcinogenic and should not be considered organic. So the Real Organic Project is really trying to push to make the standards a little bit stronger. And the National Organic Standards Board, which is the advisory organization for the National Organic Program, has really been weakened over the years. And we need to really speak out we need to speak out. And that's, you know, becoming more and more apparent these days that we can't just sit back and complain, because we all know there's plenty to complain about. But we need to really get out there in the front and work towards changing policies. And so the farmers that have come together to form the Real Organic Project need your support. And I just joined myself, and on my website I have some information about the Real Organic Project along with their website, and you can join too. They need your support so that they can work to get a better organic labeling system so that we can feel confident when we go to the store and we're buying organic that we really know what we're getting. Hydroponic, like I said, it's better than conventional, but we don't know what they're feeding the hydroponic vegetables. They're not grown in soil. They're given nutrients, and we don't know. Some nutrients are derived organically, but some nutrients are not. And there is no overseer, no inspections as to what they are actually putting into that proprietary nutrient liquid. And so, again, we just need to really band together, make sure that our voices are heard, and push for this new labeling. I also want to talk to you about a labeling that, the USDA is working on right now that is also really, really disappointing. We've all been pushing for labeling of GMO products. Genetically modified organisms are in our food. They're very controversial. Some people think they're not a big deal. Other people think they're the worst thing in the world. I personally think they're terrible and really do not want to consume genetically modified organisms. And so I need to know. If I get organic, that is supposed to be a certification that it's not genetically modified. In order to be organic, it can't be genetically modified. So that's another reason to really purchase organic. But meanwhile, they're coming out with this label. And if you check out on my website, I put it up there. The label looks like a happy face. Instead of GMO, which is what everyone knows genetically modified as, and everyone's, you know, either pro-GMO or against GMO, but GMO is the terminology that the public knows. Well, the label does not have GMO anywhere on it, or even GE, genetically engineered. Instead, they have BE, which stands for bioengineered, and underneath it, it has a little smiley face. So it looks like, and it's bright green with a yellow sun around it, and it looks like a happy face. And it's just so misleading. It's just really horrible. And there is an opportunity for us all to submit comments. And I have a link on my website at iegreen.com where you can submit your comments about this label, because this label, should it be passed, will really be misleading to so many people. And so that, too, needs your support. There's also a petition on there to let Ben and Jerry's know that we want them to stand behind their ice cream. You know, that Ben and Jerry's, everyone thinks of as such a wonderful organization. They talk about organic and supporting families and supporting good agriculture. And yet, 10 out of the 11 samples that the Organic Consumer Association tested of Ben and Jerry's ice cream tested positive for glyphosate. And that's an active ingredient that's in Monsanto's Roundup herbicide, and it's not something we want to be eating. And Ben and Jerry's, this company that I have always thought so highly of, you know, right from Vermont and all about farmers and good people and social responsibility, they're not living up to their mission. And so they need to hear from all of us. So please let your comments be heard. And we all know about the plastic problem. There's so much plastic in our waters. But what many of us don't know is there's also a lot of pharmaceuticals in our water. And that's becoming a big, big problem. And so you want to dispose of any pharmaceuticals that you have in a safe way. Right now, all police stations will take any pharmaceuticals and they will dispose of it properly. But there's a big push to get drugstores and pharmacies to take back the drugs, not to resell them, but to at least dispose of them in a proper way so they don't end up in our waterways and killing our fish. So poor oceans and the fish and the wildlife, they have so many issues to deal with between the pollution, the plastics. Of course, I just saw, you know, President Trump approved disposing of toxic waste into the waters. I mean, he's just so ridiculous. He just does not think at all about the future of the planet. He's just about business and money in people's pockets. And it's just horrible. And so we need to speak up. It's really up to the people to turn this around. And we all need to show up in November, of course, and vote as well. So if you're not registered, please register. So before I introduce Gabriela Alvarez to all of you, I want to just go over a few events that are coming up in the area. Opening day at Brooklyn Grange was this past Saturday, and every Saturday going forward, there is an open house in the Long Island City Brooklyn Grange location. And that's a rooftop farm. They have beekeeping, and they do free tours, and it's a great place to visit, so check that out. There's also an opening day at a community garden in Bellport this weekend on May 26th. And this is Memorial Day weekend. It's almost hard to believe. It just does not feel like summer's anywhere near happening yet, but it is. So there's a lot of things going on this weekend. Hopefully you have plans to enjoy the weather. We're supposed to have a great weather at least through Saturday here on the East Coast. Next weekend, June 2nd, the Great Fish Count with the Bronx River Alliance. And that's going to be an opportunity to, it's a family-friendly event, and you'll be able to wade into the water and check out the fish that you can see right in the Bronx. There's an herbal certification course that's online being taught by Ellen Kamai, who is a colleague, friend of mine, also known as the Natural Nurse, and she's also a host here on the Progressive Radio Network. And it's about feeling the consciousness of plants. And this is a part four. It's an online webinar, and you can take all four parts, and you don't have to do it in order. So you can participate in this. June 6th, the Urban Food Policy Forum is taking place at the CUNY Graduate School of Public Health. That's from 9 to 10:30 in the morning, and that's free, but you do need to register for that. And that's going to explore how two middle-income countries, both South Africa and Mexico, have responded to the changing global food system. I'm sure you've all seen in the news how America is exporting our SAD, meaning standard American diet, worldwide with our junk food, and how the rates of obesity and diabetes are skyrocketing in a lot of these countries. And so this is a wonderful opportunity to find out how they're responding to those issues. There's an herbal and edible walk at Restoration Farm. Restoration Farm is one of the few organic farms here in Nassau County. It's a wonderful farm in Bethpage. They have a CSA, which is Community Supported Agricultural Membership, which you can sign up for. They also have a farmer's market right on site that you can shop in. And a lot of farmer's markets are opening up soon. It's still a little early, especially with the spring weather that we've had. But if you have not registered for a community-supported agricultural membership, then you do want to shop at farmer's markets. Shopping at farmer's markets and bringing your own bags is one way to really reduce plastic waste. You know, during the winter, when we don't have farmer's markets, we're really kind of pushed to shop in the supermarkets where, thank God, we can at least get organic, but they're, of course, packaged in the plastic tubs and the plastic bags. You know, Trader Joe's, a company that I really love, you know, everything's packaged in plastic, and that's the part that I really don't love. So, you know, it's really great to shop where you can bring your own bags and not have to rely on plastic. And Industry City Chef Lab is presenting through Edible New York and Edible Brooklyn, a pop-up restaurant with Gramercy Tavern right at the Industry City Lab. And that's in Brooklyn. And you can find out more about it from Edible Brooklyn's website or my website. For all of these things, I have links. Change Food is a wonderful organization that came out of the TEDx Manhattan. And they have a meetup once a month, and this is an opportunity to meet other people caring about the food movement and trying to make change. And the focus here on this one is how you can use technology to help further your business. So it's a wonderful opportunity to learn things about social media and ways that you can use technology to catapult your business. There's a farm-to-table dinner to benefit Sylvia Center, and Sylvia Center is a wonderful organization that helps young people learn about where their food comes from, and they have a farm upstate New York, Catchkey Farm, in Kinderhook, New York. That's a couple hours north of New York, and they are having a farm-to-table dinner, and it is a wonderful opportunity to see what they're doing there and learn more about their programs, and it is a fundraiser, and the work they're doing is really great, so come out to that. And Slow Food North Shore, which is a slow food organization that I've ran for the last 8 years and am now stepping down from, they are introducing some new board members at this first spring celebration of theirs on Tuesday, June 19th at Osteria Liana in Oyster Bay, which is a wonderful, not so new anymore, a couple years old restaurant, but it's been voted, you know, one of the top 10 Italian restaurants on Long Island. And the chef, Peter, is really committed to sourcing locally and organic, and it's just a wonderful place. So please join us for that. Space is limited. It's not a large restaurant, so please get your tickets soon. NOFA is having a farm-to-table dinner in Poughkeepsie at the Locust Grove Farm, and that's a wonderful way to meet the NOFA board, and they have some special guests there, an auction and live entertainment, and it's also a benefit. So NOFA, which is, stands for the Northeast Organic Farming Association, is a wonderful organization, and this is supporting the New York chapter, so come out to that. And then, of course, Slow Food Nations in Denver, Colorado is coming up July 14th and 15th, if you can get out there. I went last year. It was just such a wonderful place, so you do want to check that out. And now I want to I have many more events, but I don't want to take more time, so just check them out on my website at IE Green. And I want to share with you a recipe I made for a mushroom, lentil, and farro soup. And this soup is made without any oil and salt. I have been teaching in a program called the Healthy Teachers Program that is a part of the Whole Kids Foundation. And they promote cooking with no oil and no salt. And it's a wonderful program. I mean, we all need to cut down on our oil and salt. And so soups are a wonderful way to put that into practice. And learning how to caramelize your vegetables, sauteing them before you add them to the soup without any oil is really life-changing. And you can do it with just a little bit of water, like a tablespoon of water at a time, and you stir-fry actually in the water instead of in oil. And it's been a game-changer for me. And so this soup, I'm having a lot of people over, so I made a big pot, so it feeds 12 to 15 people. If it's a first course, you might even get 20 people out of it. But I started with 8 cups of mushrooms. Now, I had made a recipe last week using the portobello mushroom caps. So I had all these portobello mushroom stems, and I didn't know what to do with them. So I figured stems are a little tougher than the actual caps, so soup was a great way to use them up. You know, being aware of food waste, as we've talked about so many times, this was a wonderful way to use the stems in a delicious way. So 8 cups of mushroom stems, 2 large onions, 3 celeries, that's just sticks of celery chopped fine, 4 cups of diced carrots, and I cut them into small wedges so that they're nice bite size. But I don't really like when you just cut it into little rounds. So these are nice little chunks. 3/4 cup of Marsala wine, 3 tablespoons of minced garlic. I use 22 cups of water to start. 2 cups of French lentils, 2 cups of farro, 4 bay leaves, 2 tablespoons of nutritional yeast, 1 tablespoon of thyme, 1/2 teaspoon of celery seed, 1 tablespoon oregano, 2.5 teaspoons pepper, and then 3 tablespoons of lemon juice, which was just a touch. I mean, you really want to serve it with a wedge of lemon and let people squeeze their own lemon in, so it's really, you know, really adds a little pop to the soup right before eating it. So I started by, in a large stock pot, I sauteed the onions dry without any oil, and as it begins to stick to the bottom of the pan, that's when I added the water 1 tablespoon at a time just to deglaze the pan and to caramelize the onions. Then I added the carrots, the celery, and the garlic and continued cooking, adding 1 tablespoon of water at a time. When they're soft, then I added the mushrooms and continued sauteing. And then at that point, I started adding the Marsala wine. In total, I used 3/4 cup, but I added 2 tablespoons of Marsala wine at a time, sauteing it and letting that evaporate, and then adding 2 tablespoons more. And so I'm now sauteing in the wine instead of oil or water. And I did that until all the wine was incorporated and evaporated. And then I added the lentils, the farro, and the 22 cups of water. And I brought that to a boil. Then I added the herbs and the nutritional yeast, and I reduced the heat to a simmer, covered the pot, and let it cook down for about 40 minutes. If you want the soup to be a little thicker, you can put an immersion blender in and just blend a little bit of the farro and lentils that kind of sink to the bottom. I didn't want to really blend up the mushrooms or the carrots, and those tend to be lighter weight and be more floating at the top anyway. So I did put the immersion blender in and just pureed a little bit of the soup so that the broth was a little thicker. And if you like salt, or you can certainly serve salt on the side with this. As I said, you also want to serve it with a wedge of lemon. Fresh parsley and dill is a nice addition, and I will put that in when I serve it up as well. I didn't have any in the house, and I'm not eating it yet. I'll be eating it tomorrow, so I will be adding that last minute. So if you have fresh parsley, that's a nice addition as well. So enjoy it. Please give me feedback. I always love hearing from everybody when they make my recipes. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you Gabriela Alvarez. She is the chef and founder of Liberation Cuisine. And Liberation Cuisine was founded in 2014 with the intention of nourishing movements for social change using sustainable ingredients and practices. And Gabriela began cooking after studying community health at Brown University. And the kitchen became her way to tackle health disparities and inequalities in the food system while maintaining a focus on self-determination and ancestral healing practices. And Gabriela now cooks almost exclusively for people doing justice work in the world, activists, artists, healers, farmers, educators, and the like. And her menus are mostly Puerto Rican-centered. That's her history, and that's you know, what she likes to highlight. And she uses local and seasonal ingredients whenever she can. She cooked for Soul Fire Farm. I had a guest from Soul Fire Farm on a couple months back for their Black and Latino farm immersion programs. And she just loves cooking. And she also teaches cooking classes. So if you're interested in that, you can check out her website at liberationcuisine.com. But now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you Gabriela. Gabriela, are you with me?
Yeah, hi. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Sure. Well, I love what you're doing, and it's so in line with everything I love. You know, I also started cooking when I was in college. You know, when I went to college, the vegetarian meal plan was so horrific that I had no choice but to start cooking for the vegetarians at the school as part of my work study. And you know, and then when I graduated college, I needed to make money right away as a single mom and started cooking also for a lot of, you know, organizations that I really felt passionate about. So I'm really happy to hear what you're doing. So I thought first maybe you could just share a little bit of your history with all of us, why you love to cook, and how did you first get involved in cooking?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're reminding me of my reputation in college was also like I was off meal plan after my first year and would like prepare all these meals in the dorm kitchen, and people were like, wow, that smells amazing. And I was like, really? But wasn't, you know, was really just thinking of it as nourishment, not something that was like an art or something that I would be doing really for many years to come. In college, I studied community health. And so that's really similar to public health. So I was really looking at just how, you know, institutions and how government really thinks about like health in our societies and approaches that they have for wellness, and learned a lot and was really thinking about how can I bring self-determination and sort of bring like people back into this process and empowerment back into this process so that folks can take steps at home. It really is a support to some, you know, larger efforts of public health, and also really thinking about how we can bring like our own ancestry and our own cultures into our wellness and health practices, which are often missing from some of the public health approaches. And so I came across an amazing chef named Bryant Terry, who has several
cookbooks. I had Bryant Terry on my show years ago.
Oh, great. He's amazing. And yes, does his last book is called Afro Vegan Chef, and does a lot of sort of talks about the history of African Americans, in particular in the South, this country, and how their foods have evolved, and soul food, and how, you know, we can really have that food with health, with the health component as well. And really, Bryant really inspired me to go to culinary school and learn some practices and gain some confidence and really apply the technique that I learned in culinary school to my own Puerto Rican cuisine and to my own, you know, family history and my own communities. And it's been wonderful since to really think about how people can really use cooking and, you know, what conversations we need to have and what skills folks need to learn and what conversations we have to be a part of. I loved hearing the intro of this show, like what conversations we need to be a part of in order to make decisions and keep the next generations healthy.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be nice if somebody in the office cared that way, right? You know, I always refer to, you know, Native American cultures, you know, talking about seven generations out, and we can't even like think of the generation we're at, right at hand, you know?
Right. It's right. Like, absolutely.
You know, corporate money, and it's this greed mentality that just is infuriating for those of us that care about people. Yeah, just infuriating. So, so talk a little bit about your solidarity work in Puerto Rico. Was that before the hurricane, after the hurricane, or did, you know, did it change after the hurricane? How did that all come together?
Yeah, so Puerto Rico, my family is from Puerto Rico, and I've been visiting throughout my life. I was born and raised in New York, but have strong ties and strong connection to the island. And in the past 4 years or so, have really been making intentional trips where I get to spend more time and really get to know folks who are doing food work and wellness work and activism work to get a sense of, you know, what's going on the island, what are the conversations, what are the solutions and the efforts that are being made. And it's been wonderful. There's such beautiful work going on the island. And when the hurricane hit, Hurricane Maria, I happened to have a ticket to the island for mid-October. And so I reached out to some friends of mine and, you know, asked, you know, how can I support? Does it make sense for me to go, or is that not really helpful? And they said, yeah, it's helpful if you come. And since you have this particular skill of cooking, it would be wonderful if you could support us by cooking meals while you're here. That way we can focus on the groundwork that we're doing. And they at the time were really sort of organizing on the ground folks to make sure that resources and supplies were getting out to specific people that needed it. When the government was not really able to get into the communities that they were in, and they were making sure that food was getting distributed. They were making sure that folks were really connected and aware of like what was going on at a time when the communications were down. And so, you know, I was really cooking to just uplift them at that point. And it's really shifted the way I think about solidarity. Oftentimes, you know, we might have like ideas of how we can be supportive. And then when we actually talk to folks, it might look really different. And it might be, you know, something really specific and one thing so that they can keep doing their work. And so, yeah, it was a really powerful trip. And I went back in January for a longer chunk of time and have been working with Agitarte, which is an organization of artists and activists. And they've been around for, I think, over 20 years. And they have been supporting several of the Centers for Mutual Aid, Centros de Apoyo Mutuo, and many of them have like comedores, which are sort of like lunchrooms or a place they've been sort of impromptu pop-up kitchens in order to feed people. So the Centers for Mutual Aid were on the ground and really allocating resources and getting lots of aid from the diaspora, from the United States, from around the world, and really making sure that it got to people and doing really beautiful community work. So Agitarte would go to these Centros de Apoyo Mutuo and offer some art. So offer like street theater that integrated the sort of the history and the reason why we're in the political situation that we are. For folks that don't know, Puerto Rico is an island in the Caribbean and it is a territory of the United States. So a lot of the conversation is around colonization. It's been a territory of the U.S. since it was a territory of Spain. And, you know, the support was really not there the way that people needed from the United States after. And it really, there's so much privatization and so much ways that the U.S. is figuring out how they can benefit off of this situation. Whereas
sure.
Agitarte and Centros de Apoyo Mutuo and farms like Finca Conciencia and organizations like Casa Pueblo, there's just so many folks really thinking like, how can we as a people be self-sustainable? How can we be independent so we're not depending on government or the United States to be there for us or to take care of things, but really being independent so that we can survive and we can be healthy and take care of the land, which has been providing and has been a resource. So yeah, it's been wonderful to get to know folks there and to continue, even though I'm back in New York, to continue to think about what is it that they need now? How can I continue to uplift? And right now it's really about having conversations like this and making sure that folks are aware of the grassroots and the radical organizing that's also happening on the island. And also making sure that in those conversations, we think about how we can financially support those organizations because they're not funded by the government. And we can, you know, keep them in our minds and keep them in conversation so that when the opportunities arise, we can make sure that funding gets to them and they're sustainable in that way.
Sure. Now, can I ask you, did you interact at all with Slow Food Puerto Rico? Or is that not
I did not.
In your circle?
I did not.
Slow Food Puerto Rico, and when this all happened, you know, I don't know if you heard earlier, I run our local Slow Food chapter up here. And so we got together and we sent, you know, two really big boxes of seeds. We got collections from farmers and we got donations from Hawthorne Valley Seeds and donated, you know, thousands of dollars worth of seeds to the farmers through Slow Food and, you know, and felt like we were doing, you know, that's how we were able to feel like we were helping, you know. But
yeah,
it was devastating. Did your path cross at all with Jose Andreas, who went down there doing a lot of cooking for people?
No, it did not. He was, I heard so much about the work that he was doing, and he was, you know, in like big, you know, the convention center and some of the big spaces where there was lots of folks and, you know, was getting funding from government and lots of folks to feed, like, you know, I think thousands of people.
Sure, sure.
Where I was more like, community-based, a smaller operation, and rather than like, you know, he was not cooking all that food by himself, but it was really like, you know, me and my aunt, or not me, but like, you know, the residents and their aunt and their cousin and their children and their neighbor, like folks really just coming together and cooking what they need. And so it was a little bit of a different community, different approach, where it's really like coming from the people and in that way really showing folks like, oh, we can, you know, we can do this. There's a really beautiful story. One of the Centro de Apoyo Mutuo en Caguas, I wasn't there when this happened, but what I heard was that the day after the hurricane, they someone just started cooking out of their kitchen, and there a line formed outside being like, yes, like we need lunch today. And then the next day they showed up again and started cooking, and someone showed up with the stove from their own kitchen and added a second stove, and they continued cooking, and more folks came, and people offered produce. Some people offered their labor. People offer cash if they have that. And so it was really just this like community-based, like we are doing this for ourselves and we are doing it by ourselves. And it was really amazing to hear about. And even, you know, there was no power, but it was like sort of what I imagine, you know, it's like in many, you know, parts of the world, or what it was like even here before electricity and television and video games and all of these things that are really embedded in our culture now. People just coming together at the table and saying, how are we going to, you know, what are we going to eat? How are we going to prepare it? We all sit down and there's a different form of connection and a different form of solidarity that happens at that, you know, at that type of dinner table. So that was really beautiful.
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely. Sounds great. Let's take a couple minute break. And when we come back, I want to hear about bundles of liberation. Tell us what that is. So everyone, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Gabriela Alvarez from Liberation Cuisine. We'll be right back.
This is PRN.FM. Giving you a daily progressive take on the world.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bhavani, and I'm the host of IE Green with Bhavani every Thursday at 10 a.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. Each week, I discuss food issues in the news, share a recipe, and interview someone in the food, health, or environmental arenas. And I invite you to join me, and you can listen either live every Thursday at 10 a.m., or you can now access my archives directly by dialing 1-701-719-0880. Please listen in or download me at another time by going into prn.fm and finding me in the archives. Again, this is Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. Hope to hear from you soon.
My name is Renee with Vaccine Information Coalition, and our show is titled, What in the Cell is Going On? We will be revealing how vaccine toxins damage our cells, how to allow the body to heal itself, and how to protect yourselves from the drug company's agenda. Join us every Monday at 2 p.m. on Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM, to learn all you need to set yourselves free from the medical, military, and industrial cartel.
PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm here with my guest, Gabriela Alvarez from Liberation Cuisine. Right before the break, we started to talk about bundles of liberation. Gabriela, are you with me?
Yep. Hi.
Hi. So tell us, what is that?
Yeah, so I'll start just a little bit about how it evolved, how it came to be.
Sure.
Liberation Cuisine, the vision is really about feeding change in our world, and really understanding that food is medicine and that food is fuel. And we've seen how food, you know, deserts have really cut folks off from access to like real and healthy food. And we see how like GMOs and access to water continues to like cut us off from good food, or even like access to land, like so many folks not even having the ability to like know where our food comes from. And so, you know, over time we've gotten less and less connected to our food. And with that, we also see how like particular communities are really cut off from food. And especially when we think about like immigrants or like native communities that are cut off from their water, have been cut off from their water and are no longer to like grow, able to grow the foods that they've been growing for generations. When we think about like the African American community and then like not, you know, being like the labor force of our land in the United States for so long and then being, you know, not granted being able to like have land in Puerto Rico, like, you know, people really not being able to like stay on the island and getting to stay with their land. And yeah, we just see, we've seen it so much throughout history. And so with Liberation Cuisine, really thinking about like, how do we make sure that we can come back to land and to food? And how do we think about in particular communities that have been marginalized and that have been like really, really displaced from the food conversations and from like healthy food? And so Bundles of Liberation is one way that we are trying to do that. And so we are connected with Rocksteady Farm, which is in Millerton, New York, and they are a queer-led and cooperatively owned farm, and they grow vegetables and flowers and are connected with other farms in the region and also really connect with land-based projects, really bringing folks
back. What's
the
name of the farm?
It's called Rocksteady Farm.
Uh-huh.
And they're wonderful. And so they have a CSA. They bring boxes of vegetables each week to Manhattan and to Brooklyn. They have different sites that they deliver to. And so, yeah, we connected with them and we said we'd love to sort of link in with this and really bring this to some of our communities. And so we are... The bundle is really the CSA, the vegetable CSA, and then I and some other chefs are offering recipes that are from really around the world and really honoring like traditional recipes. So I'll be offering some Puerto Rican recipes. There'll be some Filipino, some Indian, some Dominican recipes that will be shared by Woke Foods and then also by Gaona Kitchen. And so in addition to recipes and the vegetables, you will also get astrology updates, which is something that lots of folks are really into and think about in terms of self-care and something that our ancestors used to be much more connected to nature and to the sky. And so we're sort of bundling that into the whole let's take care of ourselves concept. And then in addition, you'll have access to a naturopathic doctor who will be offering acupuncture and herb blends, specific herb blends for uplifting and for grounding. And then we have an herbalist who will be offering these plant spirit medicine boxes that will have all kinds of herbal formulas and so much more. And yes, we've got this whole team of folks that is really just thinking about how we can tap into our wellness and how our communities can really start to think about themselves as really mattering. We see so many like social justice movements really, you know, thinking about the politics and the institutions and more really thinking about self-care and self-preservation and like we need to take care of our bodies. And Liberation Cuisine is really, really adamant about that. We need to take care of our bodies as people of color, as immigrants, as people native to this land, as queer folks. And we also need to take care of those who really have been at the front line. That's so rooted in my work in Puerto Rico. And Liberation Cuisine really almost exclusively caters for folks doing justice work. So in the catering, it's very much like, let's feed the folks who are the activists, the healers, the artists, the folks who are really, really committed to this work. So Bundles of Liberation is a new project. The CSA actually starts, Rocksteady is starting, I believe, the first week in June. Bundles of Liberation will start The last week of June, we're giving ourselves a little bit more time. And so you can go ahead to liberationcuisine.com to find out more information and check out the team of folks that will be part of the project. And you can go ahead and sign up there. And yeah, we're really looking forward to see how it unfolds and really learning from this process to continue to see how we can bring good food and healing to our folks, to our communities.
So what community are you? Where are you located?
So, good question. I'm located in Brooklyn, and Liberation Cuisine does most of our, like, catering and workshops in New York City, like Manhattan and Brooklyn. Also, do a lot of work with Soulfire Farm. We'll be heading up there for a lot of the summer and, like, the harvest season for, as you mentioned, for the Black and Latinx Farmer Immersion. So, and then, you know, have been to Puerto Rico. So it's New York-based, but more so it's really sort of in the Northeast region and Puerto Rico, really creating networks. There's some really beautiful networks starting amongst Black and Indigenous farmers in this region. And then, similarly, we're working on creating a network of chefs and cooks who are folks of color and working on, like, social justice work as well in New York City. So creating our network so that we can support one another and really uplift one another and share resources. It's really just a growing community of folks who are, just thinking about self-care amongst communities of color, queer folks.
Sounds great. Do you need to do fundraising or do these nonprofits that are working have enough money to pay you? I mean, are you hired? I assume you're not just volunteering.
That's a great question. No, I mean, this is, we're not volunteering. Very much believe that, like, we live in capitalism, and as much as we do try to think about, like, trade and other ways of existing in this world, we all have to, like, pay rent and take care of ourselves. So we do get paid, and when we hire folks, we do want to make sure that they're paid well. And so we sort of have an internal sliding scale. So we will cook the same meal with the same quality of ingredients for anyone and every of our clients. And so sometimes that means that folks will just cover, like, the cost of ingredients. And that's, like, sort of the lowest point of the sliding scale. And then other times it's more like market rate. And sometimes it's even a little above market rate. And so, you know, we'll look at, like, who is the client, what is their budget, and sort of based on that really come up with pricing. And so that way, folks who have a larger budget and can really pay a substantial amount are sort of subsidizing folks who cannot, so that Liberation Cuisine can continue to run, and that we're, like, allowing access to all folks equally.
That's nice. Yeah. I've done a lot, you know, for years. I take buses to Washington or Albany or whatever. And I also, as a chapter leader for Slow Food, you know, and I'm sure you're aware of the power of food when people come together around a table or just together eating, sharing a meal, it just brings people together. And so anytime I go on a march or a bus, and that's a lot, I'll cook. Just I have thermal catering from my years of doing catering, and I bring either hot food or, you know, this last time we did sandwiches. And, you know, I'll ask people to make a donation, but I'll just hand out the food. And, you know, where we go up and we're, you know, 50 individuals, you come back, and just with everyone eating food, you become one bus, you know? Mm. It's just amazing how it brings everybody together, and everybody feels cared for, and it creates conversation, and it just changes the whole vibe. And, I love doing that as well. And
that's awesome. Yeah, that's also great. A big part of the network of, like, chefs and cooks in the city that we're working towards building is really so that we have a group of folks to call on when there are actions like, you know, what you're talking about. And I don't know if we'll necessarily reach like Albany. I mean, there's so many things going all the time, but like having a resource in New York City where if there's something going on here that we can really, you know, have a group of folks that we know are aligned and can, you know, say, hey, like something's going on tomorrow. Can you support? And maybe one person can offer ingredients, one person can offer labor, and really bringing that into these spaces is something we're really, really thinking about and working towards.
Yeah, like I was part of the Occupied Kitchen, you know, when we were down downtown, you know, Occupied Kitchen would call, can you bring food this night? Or I'd have leftover food and I'd say, I'd call them up, you know. And so, yeah, so I was delivering, you know, once a week or something like that to the Occupation Kitchen. And it was wonderful, you know, it feels great when you're doing, when you're participating with community in important work. And
absolutely.
And people have to eat good food, so that's really great. So share with us some of the most exciting moment for you as a chef and as a woman, person of color. What would you say is a highlight of your work?
You know, when I went to culinary school and was really thinking about moving in this direction as a form of like bringing healing into the world, using food to bring healing into the world, you know, there weren't a ton of other folks doing it that I, you know, that I saw. And even like when you think, look at the Food Network, or look at who owns chefs, who owns restaurants and who owns multiple restaurants and sort of who is really visible in the food world. It wasn't folks who looked like me. The ratio of like men and women, the ratio of like white folks, folks of European descent and like communities of color, or like Caribbean people, Puerto Rican people. I was just like not seeing people who looked like me or had, you know, backgrounds that I did. And so, when I came about around Bryant Terry's work, I was like, oh wow, like something else is possible. And so I never really had the intention of working in restaurants, and it's been so amazing to see, what's possible outside of the restaurant world. Like so often it's just like chef restaurant. But there really is so many other possibilities to be cooking outside of the restaurant industry. Really an industry that, has potential, and there's some beautiful restaurants. And also there's really some, like problematic, you know, like institutionalized things in the restaurant world that are, really problematic, just the way that like, yeah, like who, you know, who's in the kitchen,
sure,
like how much people are paid,
back of the house.
Yeah, there's just, yeah, so many things there. But yeah, so for me, it's like, you know, Bryant Terry really opened some roads. And I'm sure there was lots of other folks who were, you know, really doing this work around like 10 years ago and or more. But since then, seeing like how many folks are, you know, looking around and saying, oh, it's possible. Like, I want to do this with my cuisine, or I want to do this in my city, and I want to do something outside of the box, has been so exciting for me. And seeing more and more women of color, just saying like, yeah, I'm going to figure out how to do this, is so inspiring. And yeah, I just get so excited when I get to meet other folks from other places doing similar work. And I'm really excited to see like in the next 5-10 years, what sort of, you know, how chefs are really engaging in the food movement. I think, you know, we've been talking about organic, and there, you know, there's been food justice conversations for many years. And farmers have been in this conversation, and food growers. And I'm really excited for people who cook the food to really, you know, take a larger role in some of these conversations and really like take responsibility for our role in like purchasing power and, you know, making the dishes and just like making some really conscious decisions and making some ripple effects in, you know, the food, what is our like food world, this immense, like you were talking about the farm bill earlier, just like, right, what is the role of people who cook in this larger picture? I'm really excited to see how this will unfold in the next, you know, decade or more.
And do you take on at all education? Like I'm thinking, you know, I've worked with parents in schools, you know, cooking demos at at farmers markets, cooking demos at schools to show parents how you can make healthy snacks and that kind of thing. Do you get into that at all?
Yeah, I was doing more in the past. In the past, like, year or so, I have been sort of focusing some energies elsewhere, like, you know, in Puerto Rico and just,
you
like,
you can't do everything,
more,
right?
Yeah, yeah, right? It's like time is limited. Right, but yeah, you know, I used to work at El Puente, which is a wonderful youth organization in Brooklyn. Their home base is in Williamsburg. And I used to do cooking classes there. And we created an apprentice program for folks that were really, for young people, high schoolers who were really interested in, you know, the culinary arts and food, you know, cooking as a career, and integrated like food justice and healing and all these conversations into that, you know, that culinary training for the high schoolers. And with nonprofits, we'll do, like you mentioned, like cooking demos or, you know, talking about whatever it is, you know, whatever the specific conversation is for that, you know, community, really offering some resource there. So I'll definitely do some of that. Yeah, I mean, we all have to be doing it all the time. You know, it's also like in the kitchen while we're working, you know, oftentimes there are folks who say, hey, I just want to learn and cook with you. And so they'll cook and help out in the kitchen. And during that, we're also doing education. So education can also take lots of different forms. And it's important to have it integrated at, you know, at every step of the way. We all need to be growing always.
Absolutely. Do you take on any interns? I know in the summer, usually have a couple interns that not only help with the organic farm, but then help with the cooking in the kitchen. So
yeah, I've had a number of interns throughout the past few years, and currently have an intern who's working with me through, she sort of was connected with me through Brotherhood Sister Soul, which is an organization in Harlem that also a youth organization that works with, you know, young folks of color in Harlem and really connecting them with all kinds of resources and academic support. And so she's been amazing. And I love working with young people. I love having interns. And it's great. I mean, it's wonderful because Liberation Cuisine, we, you know, have that cooking piece where we are cooking together. And so there's that skill that, you know, can be passed on. And then within that, there's so many, you know, larger conversations. And so, yeah, I really get excited about, this isn't just like a kitchen internship, but there's so many more, you know, opportunities to really delve in and get to know like food conversations and social justice conversations and see how we're doing it.
Yeah. I had dinner last night with one of my old interns who's leaving for the Peace Corps next week. And I have another intern that's in the Peace Corps already. And it's just, you know, I feel like I kind of launched them off, and it's just so wonderful to see where they go and what they're going to do. But I guess we're out of time because I hear my music.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Gabriella, thank you again for joining me. I will share all of your information on my website so people can find you. And thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a beautiful day.
You too. Everyone who's joined us, thanks so much, and I'll see you again next week. Bye for now.